Our guest at the cafe this morning is A&M Commerce Economics Professor Dr. Dale Funderburk. Good morning.
Good morning.
Article in The Hill I came across, and this is a well-respected Washington publication. This has to do with the economic freedom of the states. There's something called the Economic Freedom of the World Report, and you're familiar with this from the from long ago.
A group of Fraser Institute has maintained that for years. And again, I've for quite a number of years kept up with it at the national level.
And we'll see if we can come back to that. But this is that this is looking at the states. And the report said Texas, while still ranking very high, had fallen from first to third among the states in terms of economic freedom.
Yes.
And Florida was number one. Florida had risen to one. I didn't see anything in the article saying why Texas had fallen to third.
I did not see that specifically, but the major factors are things such as spending level, tax level, the regulatory environment. And so, again, I don't know which particular one it was that, that slipped a couple of notches.
Mm-hmm. Or why Florida rose up a bit. But, again, all of those, I think you're right, all of those are major factors. So I guess in on those particular areas, as far as the people who do this economic freedom report, Texas is, has declined somewhat. There's some really interesting numbers in here, though. In the most free states, which would include Texas and Florida, the average per capita income is about 7% above the national average. And in the states that have the least economic freedom, it's about 10% below the national average. That's striking.
It is. And interestingly, that does hold at the national level as well as the state. Those states and also the countries that tend to be more free do, on average, have higher rates of growth. They have higher per capita incomes.
And income rises faster in the freest states, which would include Texas and Florida. Population has grown three times faster than average in Texas and Florida than the rest of the country.
Right. And, of course, that is part of the engine of the growth that we see.
Brings in people from other states who come here for jobs, and their companies move here, and we've seen a lot of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what about the national ranking? You have been more familiar with this on the international, I guess, scale, and the United States looks pretty strong in that report.
We do. We have been in the top group for many years, almost as long as I've kept up. Now we have improved a little bit in the past year. We're currently ranked number six, the freest there, according to the Fraser group, is Hong Kong, Singapore, and New Zealand there. But again, it's the ones that do have the, I'd say, most favorable business environment. They tend to grow faster, have higher GDPs, have higher per capita income. Whereas on the other end, and it's especially pronounced when you look at the national figures, those with very, very low economic freedom, those are really in the tank.
What would be some examples?
At the very bottom of that, you get countries such as Venezuela, Libya, Argentina also is in that group.
Yeah.
And, of course, none of those are places where you'd want to live.
Venezuela really has turned around, and not for the better in recent years.
Conditions have become deplorable there.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Dale Funderburk, A&M Commerce Economics Professor, and we talk from time to time mostly about the Texas economy. Now, the people on the other hand would say, all right, your Texas ranks very high in economic freedom, but it doesn't rank nearly as high in terms of education or social services. So is there a trade-off there necessarily?
I'm not sure that it's a necessary trade-off, though, and I would be the first to admit that economic freedom is a long way from being the only factor. Mm-hmm. Again, those with a higher degree of economic freedom do, on average, perform better. But take, for example, California. California has a very low score on economic freedom, but their growth has still been healthy on that. An important coastline like they have, and their proximity to China, in fact, trade with the East there. They have educational facilities throughout the state that are excellent. Those things are important. They really matter.
So the trick is to strike some kind of balance.
It is.
Yeah. There was another article about the oil situation with the price of oil falling, and apparently there's some indications that the falling price of oil is already starting to have kind of a negative effect on the Texas economy.
It is, and with as much fracking as we do in shale, as it starts getting, especially if you started getting below that $60 mark, and if it goes further, that does become a real problem again. As you and I have talked before, though, fortunately, we have enough diversification there that is not the total crippler that it would have been in some years past.
How does that play out? So the oil prices fall, and then after a relatively short period of time, then we start to see it, the effect in other areas of the economy. How does that filter through the rest of the economy?
Oh, and in economics, we talk about multiplier effects. Yep. But what it is there is that when you have a major sector such as oil, as the work week is shortened, they cut back on production, we cut back on drilling, and all those lower incomes mean less spending there, and spending is a driver in the economy. So then that affects the other sectors in the state.
Well, all of these things are going to be coming into focus as the legislature comes into session early next year. And
we'll hope we're not dealing with $40 oil prices at
okay.
that time.
That's right. And boy, it's a roller coaster.
It is.
All right, Dale Funderburk, thank you for having a cup of coffee with us again.
My pleasure.
And you're starting the day with Morning Edition on your station, 88.9 KETR.